Good evening, everyone. Welcome to WCRI's special presentation of the Newport Music Festival shows that we've lined up for you. We have two special guests this evening that'll be, they've already done their time at the Newport Music Festival, and everything has gone great so far with the festival. Happy to report. And tonight we have with us two special guests, Carol Lieberman. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you with us. Carol is a violinist, and with her is someone she knows pretty well, Mark Kroll. Welcome, Mark.
I'm happy to be here, and thank you.
And you do know her pretty well, right?
I thought I did. Yeah. We have been together, playing together for 45 years and married for 39 of those.
Oh, so you played around for a few years before you got married.
Not exactly.
Yes, I did play around with her.
Well, okay, well, that's exactly what I meant. But Carol's taking exception to that, I think. But Mark is a harpsichordist. So when did all of this start for you, Mark?
Actually, I started out as a pianist. My goal was to be one of the virtuosos, and I was playing only Rachmaninoff and Liszt. And then at the age of 17, which is a crucial age for any kid, I think, I heard harpsichord, I heard the music, and I said, this is for me. And I switched to harpsichord and never looked back since I've been 17.
Now, I think that's a little bit unusual for someone to hear a harpsichord and say, this is for me. What was it about? Was it the sound, the style of music? What was it that really attracted you?
Yes.
Both. All of the above.
It was that what was happening is first I heard the sound. I loved the sound. And then I found myself playing all of this 17th, 16th, and 18th century repertoire, like the Fitzwilliam Virginal book, on the piano. And I said, I love this music, but it doesn't sound like I want it to sound. And so I tried it on the harpsichord and said, yes. So it was the repertoire, the sound, but also the feel of the instrument itself.
Excellent. And you're at Boston University now, and you've been there a while?
I was there for 25 years, and then I retired.
Oh, you're retired
yeah.
now. Okay.
I built, if I may brag on it, but that's what a radio show allows one to do, I think.
Absolutely.
When I arrived there in 78, there was one broken down harpsichord. I left, and no program. I left with a harpsichord department, an historical performance department, courses, many instruments. So it was time to say, okay, I did what they asked me to do. I fulfilled my mandate, and it's time to leave.
Now time to play around with Carol some more.
Yes, exactly.
And bringing both of you to the Newport Music Festival, Carol, a little bit about your background. We know that you've been with Mark for 40-some-odd years. What happened before that? Did you go to school for violin, or did you just happen to be attracted to that? What's your story?
My story is that I started playing the violin at the age of six.
Six, and okay. So now it's been 46 years. Right, about 40 years ago, right?
You don't talk about that.
Thank you.
But it was modern violin, mm-hmm. and I still play modern violin. And I actually met Mark when we were graduate students at Yale. And I got my DMA in violin, modern violin. And when I met Mark, that's when I began playing Baroque violin. So my Baroque violin playing is entirely due to my acquaintance with Mark.
In other words, it's all my fault.
It's all his fault.
All his fault, all right. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about your violin and about you, but I want to get to some music so that people can have a little bit of an example of what they missed when they missed you last Thursday night, and you were at the Breakers, so a beautiful place for concert.
Oh, yes.
We're in the midst of the Newport Music Festival, which is running now through July 27th. And if you want to check out what's left to come, you can't catch up with Mark and Carol anymore, but there are lots of shows and lots of performances, and you can do that by going to the website and checking out newportmusic.org. Very simple to remember, newportmusic.org. And if you want to do it the old-fashioned way, make a phone call. It's 401-849-0700. And operators are standing by, as I say, to give you the information. Mark and Carol, you've brought some CDs with you with some examples of your work and other people's work that illustrate the style. Tell us what we're going to listen to first.
We are listening to not Johann Sebastian Bach, whose music really was the only composer's music of our concert on the 17th, but of his son, his very talented son, Carl Philipp Emanuel. And this is a sonata for violin and harpsichord in B minor. Or should I say, with Carol's permission, it's really a sonata for harpsichord and violin.
Okay.
And there's a lot of harpsichord, as people notice right away. And basically, it's wonderful. C.P. Bach went a bit further than his father and was already into the pre-classical, almost classical style. And he's very emotional, and he has a sort of a manic harpsichord part. And the violin sweetly keeps insisting, "No, I want to play beautiful music." And it goes back and forth between the harpsichord, who has 32nd notes all over the place, and a beautiful violin sound.
Excellent. We will listen to that now and then take a short break and be back with more of Mark and Carol representing the Newport Music Festival. Welcome back to WCRI's presentation of a special Newport Music Festival show with Mark Kroll and Carol Lieberman. Mark is a harpsichordist and Carol a violinist, and tonight she's actually a Baroque violinist, and we're going to ask Carol about that. I know you mentioned it in the first segment, the difference between the traditional violin, if you will, and the Baroque, and I also noticed that if we had a television camera here, people would see that you brought your instrument with you, even though you're not playing it. So first off, what's the difference between the two?
Well, a Baroque violin is the ancestor of the modern violin. And basically, the bow and the violin are both different. The Baroque violin just doesn't play as many notes as the modern violin. So it only goes up to a certain pitch. And the bow is completely different. Instead of having a long modern bow which curves in the middle, the Baroque French bow has the curve at the tip of the bow. And so it's shorter as well as getting different articulation. So that's those are two of the things. The Baroque violin usually plays with gut strings. Modern violin has covered gut strings. And the pitch is lower on a Baroque instrument. So you're playing about a half a tone, basically, lower than the modern pitch.
See, I can do that in my a cappella quartet just by going off pitch. Well, and I'm sure you've...
That's it in a nutshell. There are many other differences, too.
Excellent. And I'm sure most people listening didn't know that. And the other part of the story is that you brought it with you because it's probably pretty valuable, correct?
It is, but I think all violinists do not leave their instruments around. We all kind of have them attached to us.
Right.
Because they're all valuable, and we're a little paranoid.
Yeah, you don't want anything to happen to that. And Mark, I didn't see you bring your harpsichord into the studio, but you know, it's probably just as valuable to you.
Well, I mean, I did bring it on my back, but I decided not to use it because it was out of tune. Yeah, you know, in the early days of my career, I would have had to bring my harpsichord everywhere. It's better. Things are better. There are better harpsichords around now, so I don't have. I don't have to lift and carry and pack up anymore, which is good at my age.
Well, that's a nice thing. So, so in fact, at the festival, you didn't use your personal harpsichord?
No. We actually, there is a wonderful institution almost, organization called the Harpsichord Clearinghouse in Rehoboth. And they have a choice of wonderful instruments, and they provided it for our concerts.
Excellent. Well, that's great, because I do know quite a few harpsichordists, and that's always a big deal to get it in, get it acclimated to the climate of the room, get it, you know, all of those things have to go on, right?
With that. Oh, yeah. And look, a harpsichords are wonderful, but if it's a very change in humidity, no harpsichord can hold its pitch. There's a very famous old story about lute players that I might share with you. It was in the 16th century. Someone said, a lute player spends half his life tuning his instrument and the other half playing out of tune. Now, that's not true for a harpsichordist, I'd like to think, but they are sensitive to changes in humidity.
Very sensitive, and wonderful instruments.
Oh, yes.
One of the advantages of doing what I do and singing in an a cappella quartet is you don't have to worry about any of that. You just, you know, just show up. No harpsichord, no violin to carry around. So it's a lot easier for us.
Yeah, but harpsichordists don't get sore throats.
Well, there you go. That's right. You can almost play no matter what happens, unless you get a, you know, torn fingernail or something.
Still can play.
All right, that's great. And the two of you have been playing together for so many years. Do you have the opportunity to perform a lot together? Carol, is this something that happens once a year?
No. We have played all over the world. We played a great deal in Europe, Italy, France, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Poland. Yeah. We even played in Dubai.
Okay.
And Abu Dhabi.
And Abu Dhabi. And of course, New York, New England. So we've been around.
Right. Now, when you get an opportunity to travel, let's just say Dubai, how does that come about? Does someone there, like Mark Malkovich did in Newport, know about you and invite you? Or is that done through an agency? How does that come about?
I let Mark answer that.
Well, that's a very interesting story, which I'll keep brief but interesting. We were playing at the Bach Archiv in Leipzig, Germany. And in the audience was the minister economic minister of Abu Dhabi, who was married to a German woman from Leipzig, and he was visiting his in-laws.
Mm-hmm.
He comes up afterwards and says, "That was wonderful. Would you like to play in the United Arab Emirates?" And we took about a mini second to say yes. And so that was just very lucky. And it was a spectacular experience. This was before Dubai became what it is now. I mean, but it was still pretty impressive, but
right.
Nothing like it is now. But it was a great experience.
Well, it's a very interesting place. And I know a lot of people that travel and have the opportunity to just stop there, even in the airport, is just extremely impressive.
Well, when we left, our plane left around 2 in the morning, the place was packed with shoppers buying gold at the Dubai airport.
And you probably had, you know, trouble carrying all the gold out of Dubai that they paid you, I would think.
Not exactly.
I wish. And it was those barrels of oil that were a problem getting on the plane.
Okay, that's another little problem. Well, Newport, you did a couple interesting things in Newport. You played at the Breakers last Thursday, and then today you were the first concert to take place at the Redwood Library, which is a historic building in Newport. And so that's pretty neat that you've had opportunity to do both of those things. And we're glad that both of you are here and adding your talents to the festival, which WCRI is proud to be a very small part of. And I'll tell you, audience people, once again, if you'd like to get more information, you can do so by going to newportmusic.org or call 401-849-0700. And the festival just runs for another 10 days or so, so make sure you jump on board and catch the concerts that are left and support this wonderful music festival. Mark, let's get back to the music and the combination of harpsichord and violin. For someone like me, I must admit, I don't listen every night to harpsichord and violin, and it's an occasional listening. Why do those two work well together?
You want me to answer that first or the violinist? Okay.
Well, either way.
Well, violin and harpsichord have been playing together since probably the 16th century or so. And it's a great combination because neither one covers the other. And the literature is so fabulous that obviously the great composers like Johann Sebastian Bach wrote many sonatas, which we have recorded. And Bieber, who I believe you'll hear later on, also recorded. And they just sound right together.
Okay, and it's normal for just those two instruments versus adding a cello or adding other chamber pieces?
Sometimes it all depends what you had. Certainly you had a basso continuo was supported by a cello or a gamba or a violone or even a bassoon, any low instrument. But when you had obbligato harpsichord, which is what the C.P. Bach was, that involved just the harpsichord and violin. I should add to what Carol said that when the first virtuoso instrumental music was invented, which is essentially at the beginning of the 17th century in, of course, Italy, who invented opera and everything else, including gelato, or the best. There's no question about that. It was the violin that really took center stage very early with composers like Marini and Castello and Salomone Rossi. They just saw the potential of a harpsichord-violin combination. And the rest, as I say, is history. Then they followed that was Corelli and Torelli and all the Ellis. And so the instrument is a natural. And even the contemporary music, there are a lot of great pieces for violin and harpsichord.
Excellent. All right. Well, why don't we get to another couple of examples? We're going to play two pieces, number 26 on the CD that you brought for us first. Tell us about that. And then we're going to follow that right up with track one. So tell us about those two pieces.
Okay. This is for solo harpsichord. Which, of course, is so much better. No, I didn't say that. these are two pieces by two French composers, and the French harpsichord composers, les clavecinistes, dominated that period for almost 200 years, from about 1620 to the end of after the Revolution. The first piece is by François Couperin, Le Grand, as they said, the great. And he thought so, and everybody else thought so, too. He wrote the best harpsichord music ever, period.
Okay.
Period. Not the best Baroque music, but the best harpsichord music. All everybody right. could acknowledge that. And this is a piece from one of his suites, or ordre, the third or troisième ordre, and it's a chaconne, which is it's a repeated bass pattern, and it's called La Favorite, very beautiful in C minor, and it's also my favorite.
All right, and what about the other piece we're going to follow that up with?
After François Couperin died, and after Louis XIV died, who really exercised great control on everything artistic and otherwise, things got a little bit more loose and free, and some composers started to write music that Louis or François might not have been approved because it was very accessible and rather extreme. One of these pieces was written by a composer not very well known called Joseph Nicolas Pancras Royer in the mid-18th century, and it's called Vertigo. Oh. And it sounds just like Vertigo. If they ever make the Hitchcock, remake the Hitchcock movie,
this should be the background.
This should definitely be the background.
All right, we'll listen to both of those pieces and take a short break and be back with more of Newport Music Festival's Mark Kroll and Carol Lieberman.
Thank you.
We are back on WCRI's presentation of the Newport Music Festival special shows. And as our guests this evening, we have Carol Lieberman, violinist, and Mark Kroll, harpsichordist. And they've been playing together for 40-some-odd years and very, very fortunate to be married for all of those, a lot of those years, 39 of them, I guess. And off-air, during that last commercial break, we traded stories. I was very privileged a couple weeks ago to become a proud first-time grandfather, and I understand the two of you are going to be experiencing that very soon, right?
Yes, in about 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Or less.
Or less, all right.
Well, more.
Or more.
Or who knows, right?
And we know it's a girl, and unfortunately they're in California, and we're here.
Well, I'm sure you'll get to see them first. I was very excited when my granddaughter arrived, Brooke Alexandria Mano, and keeping a long tradition of the Alex Alexandria part in our family name, because I'm an Alec, my son is an Alec in middle names, and my brother, and so forth and so on, so he chose the name, and we all have initials that spell something. My brother is Robert A. Mano, so Ram. I'm Ma'am, and my son is Jam, Justin. And now we have Bam, so from Brooke Alexandria. So
that's very interesting. We don't have that kind of connection story, but our a grandchild will be Sophia Alexandra Kroll.
Really?
And they chose it, and that's, of course, up to them. And it's a beautiful name. Alexandra's just a beautiful name.
It is. See that? We didn't even know. We didn't mention that part during the commercial break, so we have that in common. And it's a wonderful thing. For those of you out there that haven't experienced it yet, it's quite an exciting time. Let's get back to the Newport Music Festival. And, Carol, this is your debut, or this was your debut last Thursday
The
festival. And but for Mark, you've been here before, many times.
Not many times. I was here 25 years ago, and then I came back, but I didn't get older. I got better, and I played last year at the Breakers, two concerts of French Baroque music, which, of course, including François Couperin, and I just love, it's a privilege, and that's not just to sound too flattering, but it's a privilege for all kinds of reasons. It's a great festival, but also the acoustics for a harpsichordist are a dream come true. Unfortunately, in America, we don't have chateaus. We don't have palaces. We have dry acoustical places with drop ceilings. So to be able to play a harpsichord in a place like the Breakers, which is acoustically and visually as perfect as you can get for a harpsichord, there's not much that's better.
And lots of other music as well.
Of course,
I know that, I've had the privilege of performing at the Breakers for many, many years during the Christmas concerts, and it's always jammed with people, and it's a wonderful atmosphere. It is a beautiful, beautiful building. So that's part of the mystique, if you will, of the Newport Music Festival, utilizing lots of different venues everywhere from Blythewald this year to the Casino Theater in Newport, and several of the traditional mansions, if you will, and the Redwood Library.
The Redwood Library, yes.
That you did this morning. So that's a great thing. I have a question about harpsichord for you, and being involved in teaching for many years as you were. I live in a home that we have several pianos. We have a grand Mason Hamlin. We have a grand Steinway. And in our dining room, we have a Weber piano, which was built, as near as we can tell, around 1865 or 1870. And that's in a different shape. And it's square. It's not a traditional grand piano that people think of today. And you'll see it if you look at old movies, people like me that aren't as involved in the music as the two of you are. But you'll see the shape is different and the sound is different. It sounds more like a harpsichord than a modern piano. Is that an evolution that took place from harpsichord to piano, or were both instruments going at the same time?
Oh, no. Basically, the harpsichord was sort of the king of instruments, my apologies to organists, for 300 years. And it's a fabulously expressive instrument, but one of the things it doesn't do is have dramatic changes in dynamics. Mm-hmm. It's mono, like an organ, it has basically almost a monochromatic sound. Around 1705 in Italy, of course, again, some decided to try to put, instead of the plectra that plucked the string, put little hammers, martelletti, on the device that strikes the string. He advertised it in the newspaper as gravi cembalo col pian e forte, which means big harpsichord with soft and loud.
Hmm.
And that's where the piano came in. It wasn't very good. It wasn't very acceptable. But the technological advances were dramatic. And by the 1770s, beautiful forte pianos, as we call them now, were being built, extremely different than what's now the modern piano. They did resemble the harpsichord in shape, in the thickness or the thinness of the construction. The size of the hammers were less than half that of what the hammers are today. And gradually the instrument got bigger and bigger and bigger, but it was only until Steinway in the 1850s decided to put a metal frame for tuning stability and for structural stability that the piano began to be what we know it today. Before that, all previous pianos had a much different sound and a much different touch. So you're talking about the pianos of Mozart, Haydn, Schubert, Beethoven, Schumann, and even Liszt were very different than the modern Steinway.
Well, there you go. That's something I always wanted to know, and a wonderful thing. We're going to have to keep this segment for historical purposes.
Okay.
And, Carol, we could probably ask you the same thing. We talked about the Baroque violin and the difference in that. Was that also an evolutionary thing, or were both going at the same time, more or less?
It was an evolutionary thing. And basically, I had mentioned that the Baroque violin simply did not have as many pitches.
Right.
Didn't go as high as the modern violin. And gradually the trend was to add more notes and to also get louder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that governed the inside of the violin. You had a bigger bass bar, a bigger sound post, the fingerboard expanded so you could play higher. The bow changed so that you could play louder. And this all happened gradually around the 19th century is when the modern, so-called modern instrument really evolved, and that's when it stayed there.
Well, thanks to both of you for the lessons on the instruments. I'm sure very interesting to our audience, and thanks to both of you for coming in today. We will look forward to seeing you appear in other places, hopefully. We'll here at WCRI keep our audience posted if something comes up for you. And if you're ever back in the area, I hope you come back and do one of our shows again. It'd be great to have you.
It's been a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you.
You'd be delighted to come back. Thank you.
Excellent. We have one more piece of music to go out with, and we will listen to this as Mark explains what it is that we're going to listen to from this next sonata, I believe, right?
This is a sonata written by Heinrich Ignaz Franz von Bieber. And Bieber is famous for his mystery sonatas, but this is a collection of sonatas that are secular from 1680. And Bieber was a virtuoso, as much of a virtuoso, if not more so, than Paganini. And he wrote some of the hardest violin music ever written. And this is before the 18th century. And you can hear it right away. And Carol just tosses it off like it was Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Mark, since I've really enjoyed talking with both you and Carol, we've gone a little bit long. So this last piece, we'll only listen to a portion of it.
I don't think Bieber would have minded.
All right. Thanks again. And we'll look forward to seeing all of you next week on the special WCRI presentation of the Newport Music Festival.